This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not provided as financial, legal, or any other advice. The information is not investment advice or an offer to buy or sell any securities or make any investment. The views expressed by guest speakers are their own, and any reference to third-party products, services, or information does not constitute an endorsement thereof by SNN or its affiliates. SNN expressly disclaims all liability for any individual's use of the information presented in this podcast. My guest on the show today is Tamir Polek, chairman and CEO of The Real Brokerage, Inc. It's a publicly traded company. The symbol is REAX on NASDAQ. Real is a real estate experience company working to make life's most complex transactions simple. The fast-growing company combines essential real estate, mortgage, and closing services with powerful technology to deliver a single, seamless, end-to-end customer experience, guided by trusted agents. With a presence in all 50 states throughout the U.S. and Canada, Real supports more than 15,000 agents who use its digital brokerage platform and tight-knit professional community to power their own forward-thinking businesses. Full description is according to the company's website, and additional information can be found on its website at www.onereal.com. I invited Tamir on the show today to discuss The Real's business model, Real's competitive moat and differentiation, as well as Tamir's 3 to 5 year vision for the company. With that, please enjoy my conversation with Tamir Polek, chairman and CEO of The Real Brokerage, Inc. Tamir, thank you for joining me today. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. I'm great. How are you?
You know, we were just joking offline that we're both finally overcome our 2 week stint of flu. So, you know, way better than last week, that's for sure. So
I was joking last week with a few of my friends. I started Real 10 years ago, and for 10 years I could not allow myself to get sick, so I wasn't sick for 10 years, and then this time, this winter, I just got the flu and it was brutal. So
I've been sick and I just kind of pushed through it, but this one was one where it was like, I literally, you just couldn't. So I'm happy to be back in the game and to do a couple, you know, what I love to do, which is these things right here, which is doing interviews with, you know, people like you. So, you know, I've had heard of Real a little bit prior to when we first chatted, you know, a few weeks ago about, you know, potentially coming on the pod, you know, but as I dug into the story, you know, it is eerily reminiscent to some other stories that we've had on the podcast in the past. And we'll, you know, you'll probably hear it, anybody listening in once we dig in. But, you know, to start us off, this is one question that I ask everybody on here. Can you start us off with that one line that best describes Real?
Sure. So Real is a real estate tech company. We built a platform for real estate agents to grow their businesses on. We're one of the largest brokerage in the US, and we also operate a mortgage company and a title company. So that's in one line.
That's you guys in a nutshell. There you go. So like you said, you founded the company about 10 years ago. You know, let's take a look back at that history. When was, you know, exactly the company founded, and what was the original thesis for the founding?
Yeah, so we founded the company in the middle of 2014, and I'm coming from a combination of technology background and real estate background, and I always wanted to do something with those two kind of expertise. And when we looked at the brokerage industry in the middle of 2014, we realized a few things. One, that there are 1.5 million agents operating in the US, real estate agents. All of them have to be affiliated with a brokerage. That's a regulatory requirement. And the overwhelming majority of them, 95% of them, were working or affiliated with traditional brokerages. So names like Keller Williams, Century 21, Remax, all of those folks operated in the same way. All of them operated out of offices. All of them did things pretty manually. And we thought that they delivered poor value at a high cost. And at that point in time, we realized that there's an opportunity to create a brokerage that delivers better value at a lower cost. And at the same time, if we're trying to look at the future of the brokerage or industry in general, we can understand that you have to find a way to operate on thinner margins and operate much more efficiently. So how can we eliminate the need for all of those fixed costs, the office space, the manual labor? How can we automate as much as possible And how can we create a platform for those small business owners, the agents, to grow their businesses on? And that's how we started. I can tell you that that was somewhat a naive kind of vision. We wanted to make agents' lives better, and we didn't know a lot about the industry. And that's a good thing, by the way, because it enabled us to dream differently and envision something that was very different from what was out there at the time. But this is how we started. We raised about $64 million to date. Right now, as of the last couple of quarters, we're cash flow positive. We're adjusted EBITDA profitable as well. Went public in 2020, initially in Canada, but then we listed on NASDAQ. Right now, we're listed on NASDAQ only. But also the story of us going public was also quite unusual. I don't know if you want to go into it now or later. But yeah, so in 2020, we were making about $15 million in annual revenue. So super small company, but we believe that our agents are partners in this business, in this company that we're building together. And we realized that agents don't own any equity in the company. And we wanted to create an incentive for them and a reward for them for helping us grow the company together. And obviously, publicly traded equity is much more attractive compared to stock options in a private startup. So we decided to actually take the company public and institute an equity incentive plan for the agents, which turned out extremely well for us. If you look at our growth until the summer of 2020 and after the summer of 2020, is pretty much day and night. So we came into becoming publicly traded with around 800 agents. We're now with over 15,000. And we've grown tremendously since the middle of 2020. So that idea of taking the company public and making the agents partners in this business just changed the entire trajectory of the company.
Absolutely. And thank you for that overview there, Tamir. So what would you say, you know, the company that I was thinking of that I've interviewed in the past, and I'm sure you get this all the time, is EXPI. Right. I'm sure you get that all the time. That is like, you know, direct competitor, direct value comp, all that kind of stuff. So when thinking about Real and, you know, the competitive landscape out there, what would you say makes Real unique and different compared to companies like EXPI and others?
Mm-hmm. I think that EXPI is a great company, by the way. Many people think that, you know, those two companies compete and maybe there's a bad blood, or I think that they have changed a lot of lives in the industry, and I salute them for that. And I think that it's a great company. The first time we heard about EXP, I think, was at the end of 2017. So we had no idea that this company existed, even though I think they started back in 2009. And obviously, people need to compare things to things they know. So the closest comparable is EXP, just because the two companies are non-brick and mortar. So we don't have offices for the agents to use. We have kind of similar ways of attracting agents through referrals from existing agents. This is why people put us in the same bucket. But if I'm trying to think about where Real will be in 2 years and where EXP is going, I think that the two companies are different on different levels. First, the vision. Both companies were born because the companies wanted to benefit with agents and wanted to create a better alternative for agents in terms of brokerage. At some point in time, we took the turn and decided that we are going to also try to serve home buyers and home sellers in a better way. So our vision includes building technology that will completely transform the home buying and selling experience using technology while leaving the agents in the center of the transaction. While, to my knowledge, EXP is focused on building a brokerage. So that's one thing. Second, the culture that we built, and I don't want to compare the two cultures, but I think that we are very well known within the industry to be a very collaborative brokerage where people are cooperating instead of competing. And that's very unique. We're very different on different kind of financial metrics and very different on the technology. We are a mobile-focused company, whereas EXP is building basically for a desktop. So we believe that, you know, agents and consumers need everything in the palm of their hands. This is why, you know, mobile is the present. It's also the future. And we believe in mobile. And this is where we allocate most of our focus.
Got it. So a couple different rabbit holes I want to go down here, because the main thing I want to understand with Real, and even just, you know, the whole kind of digital brokerage space is the true moat that surrounds, mm-hmm. you know, the Reels and or the EXPI, you know, whatever it is, you know, because on one hand, it's, you know, I'm just trying to maybe put my you know, if I were a real estate broker hat on, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, maybe looking at these two or maybe another competitor and thinking to myself, well, where is it, the tech that's really drawing me to want to work with these brokers, either one of these, or is it the terms of which, you know, I'm just making more money, right? So yeah. Like so what is that true moat when you think about Real and maybe just in the digital brokerage space in general?
I think that there's a difference between the moat and what actually attracts agents to a brokerage. So when we ask our agents, why did you choose to join Real? We typically hear a few things. One is freedom and flexibility. So think about agents, they're independent contractors, they own their own business, but regulators require them to work under a broker or a license of a broker. And typically brokers take advantage of that power that was given to them. So they're asking the agents to come to the office at a certain time, and their marketing materials should look in a certain way. And they are actually working towards building somebody else's brand. So, you know, an agent at RE/MAX is building the RE/MAX brand, for example. So you don't really have the freedom and flexibility to build your business the way you want to. And when they join us, they join a platform that is fully flexible, because we believe that this is your business. You know what's best. As long as it's compliant with the law, you can do it. So that's number one. Number two is the economics. The average agent at Real will end up paying half to Real compared to what they're paying at their current traditional brokerages. And that's significant. Top performers and high producing agents will end up paying, I don't know, 80, 90% less. And we're talking about sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. So that's a huge cost saving for them. Third is the technology that we built for them that really allows them to streamline their businesses, close a larger number of transactions, have better visibility into their business, and we can dive a little bit into it. The fourth is the culture, as I mentioned before. They feel as if agents want to be at an environment where they know they can grow, they can learn from others who are eager to teach them. They can have a lot of opportunities and they can take their career to the next level. And this is exactly the kind of culture that we managed to build here. And the last thing that we're hearing from them is the opportunity. We're at 15,000 agents. The consensus is that we will get to tens of thousands of agents within a couple of years and then surpass 100,000 agents. And agents want to be here early on to benefit from that because of the equity, because of the fact that they can influence some of the decisions that the company is making. They want to be a part of this early stage opportunity. Now, this is why agents are joining. When it comes to moats, I think that the moats are on the internal technology that we built. At the end of the day, what a brokerage does, aside from supporting agents and overseeing what agents do, we're a transaction processing machine. We need to take real estate transactions, process them, pay the agents, move to the next one. What we have built is a way to process transactions with as little human intervention as possible. And that results in a huge cost saving. So typically at a brokerage, you would have one employee for every 20 agents. In our cases, 1 to 100. So think about the amount of labor, manual labor that we're saving and the amount of money that we're saving in our operation because of the technology, because everything is automated to the full extent possible. And I think, by the way, that this is the main moat that we currently have. Now, once you have done that, you can go to the next phase. Because we own our proprietary technology, because everything that has to do with agent support, transaction management, payment processing, everything is in-house and everything is interconnected, you can start thinking about building innovative new products and services that you can monetize. And I'll give you an example. We are in about a month and a half, we are launching a digital wallet. That's the first digital wallet in the industry. And we're probably the only company or one of very few companies that can execute on that. The idea behind it is the fact that when agents close a transaction, we receive the commission check and then we deposit their split into their own bank accounts. Because we have so much data on the agent operation, their past transactions, their future transactions, how often they interact with our team, their equity position in the company, the revenue share stream that they have if they're attracting others, we have a lot of data. And that data can enable us to underwrite our agents to a specific credit line for each and every one of them that can be dynamic. And we can offer them, for example, a credit card to use in order to grow their business. If they want to buy more leads or they need to invest in their business, all of a sudden they have a business credit line from us that they cannot get anywhere else. And this is because of the technology that we own. It would not have been possible unless we owned all of this technology. So that's just one example of how you can create new services, new features, and other ways to monetize the brokerage business because of technology.
Very good. I mean, and I appreciate you answering these questions because I'm sure you get these all the time, right? When, you know, people trying to evaluate the brokerage business and like the digitization
of it, right? I'm excited about what we're building. So I don't mind talking about it 24/7.
No, 100%. But I mean, I'm assuming, again, not to go back to an EXPI, but I'm going to do it anyway, just because from what I understand. I mean, do they have some kind of tech solution that they've upgraded over the years that's similar to what Real have? Like, that's really the main point is like, do you have any kind of IP, anything protecting what makes your technology so unique for the brokerage business?
I think that at this point, we're probably a few years ahead of everybody else when it comes to the proprietary technology and our capabilities and the add-ons that we can add to the technology. So, I mean, everybody claims that they have technology. I'll give you another very interesting fact. In some of the tech-powered brokerages out there, if you ask them what percentage of your agents are actually using your tech, I think that the best case is around 20%. At Real, 100% of our agents, 100% are using our technology. So that gives you an indication of how valuable the technology is, both for the agents and for us internally. 100% of the agents, nobody else can tell you that.
Got it. You know, you've kind of done the dog and pony show a little bit. Like, you've gone out there and done some presentations and met with investors, of course, right? You know, so
yeah.
What would you say investors still get confused about, or maybe some frequently asked questions that you also get from them when, you know, presenting them with the opportunity and to better understand Real?
Yeah, well, obviously the past 2 years have been a little bit challenging for the real estate sector in general. Investors just did not want to invest in anything related to real estate. I think that this is now changing. I think that, as I said before, people want to compare companies to something that they know. So right now we're placed in a bucket of new age brokerages. This is where they place us. But I think that this is due to the fact that we have not yet created our own bucket, which probably will happen very soon, because at the end of the day, we're not building a brokerage right here. We're building a financial ecosystem for agents and their clients. And I think that in a couple of years, we will be known as the company that completely transformed the home buying experience and just improved it. Because I think that this is the main point that exists right now in the industry in general. Like, you can build a lot of things for agents, but if you truly care for agents, you have to care about their clients as well. And I think that if, I don't know if you ever went through the process of buying a home, but buying a home is not a great experience. It lacks transparency, it lacks speed, it lacks control for the buyer. There are a lot of things that can be improved. And think about the fact that this is the biggest financial decision of your life, and you're putting all of your savings plus you're borrowing a lot of money. And at the end of the day, it results in a crappy experience that takes, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 6 months. This is not the fault of the agent. The agents are doing a great job at supporting their clients and guiding them through that highly complicated transaction. I think that the brokerages have failed to invent an experience that's far better than it has been before. Buying a home today resembles buying a home 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And this is what we need to focus on. So I think that once we roll out all of our consumer-facing technology, I think that people will realize that, okay, this is not a brokerage. This is not an EXPI comp. This is something different. But you know, we'll have to continue and work hard and demonstrate that.
Absolutely. I have to ask, you know, from a macro perspective, I mean, when it comes to home buying, residential, real estate, all that, you know, that's all very much driven and dependent by interest rates, you know, people's perception of where interest rates are going and whatnot. You know, how does that perception of, how does that affect real in any way?
Couple of things. One, obviously, we operate in the real estate industry and we're impacted. Our agents are impacted by market conditions. I can tell you that 2023 has been one of the most challenging years in more than two decades. Last quarter that we reported was the third quarter of 2023, which generally in the market, you saw a drop of about 40% in 2023 compared to 2021. So the market dropped by about 40% in those 2 years, and maybe between 2022 and 2023, the market dropped by about 20%. Our revenue in the third quarter of 2023 actually went up 92%. So despite of those extremely challenging market conditions, we grew tremendously. This is about our own performance. We went into 2024 quite optimistic, I have to say. Like, typically, I'm very conservative when it comes to evaluating or estimating what the market is going to do. But I'm quite bullish on 2024. What we have seen since the beginning of the year, and now we're at the end of February, January started with very strong demand and some more inventory coming to the market, which was a good indication, because at the end of the day, you need more transactions in order to make more money. So there were very encouraging signs, both on demand side and on supply side. I think that what happened when the 10-year started going up again, we're seeing demand cooling down a little bit. So there's a lot of sensitivity around mortgage rates. Mortgage rates at 6.5 seemed extremely attractive. Now they're closer to 7, so a little bit less attractive. But I think that if we're trying to look further into the year, you know, Q2, Q3, Q4 of 2024, I think that we will see a great improvement over 2023. So, you know, the worst is behind us. But I also think that we have a structural problem in this country where we're missing a lot of homes. Just because of that decade of underbuilding between 2010 and pretty much until today, you cannot build homes overnight, and that structural problem will persist probably throughout the next 5 years. This is why I don't believe that prices are going to drop. Maybe in some markets they're going to correct a little bit, but there's just not enough inventory.
Listen, you're preaching to the choir here. I live in Los Angeles. Like, you want to talk about... You want to talk about like the snail pace? I mean, my in-laws they build residential homes, right? Like, so I know firsthand the pain and the just struggle in dealing with, you know, local governments and getting permits and all that stuff. It's just a pain in the ass.
And by the way, I think that one of the tasks for the government is how do you actually make housing more affordable? And they're so focused on interest rates, whereas they should be focusing on the supply side. How can you incentivize developers to go and build? How can you add a large number of homes over the next 5 years in order to make housing affordable? But it doesn't feel to me like there's a focus on that.
Man, look, you know, I know you're having fun with real, but if we want to talk offline about us getting into bit, no, I'm just kidding. pull some capital, we'll just start developing, go to like the one place in California that's like, yeah, no, build here, you know, and I'm just kidding. Yeah. But, you know, so firstly, again, thank you for answering all these questions on, you know, everything not only having to do with the business, but also kind of looking at the macro forces at play here, you know, that affect real as well. You know, One more devil's advocate type question that I ask everybody on here. You know, in your opinion, sure. what would you say are some of the company's downside risks that maybe folks should better understand here?
You know, typically investors ask me, what keeps you up at night? And this is a great way for investors to gauge, like,
what you're question.
Concerned about.
Yeah.
And, you know, as of late, my answer was that what concerns me is that I don't see too many reasons to be concerned in the, you know, the short or medium term for the company. And that's concerning because there might be a danger out there that you're not noticing. Or the biggest concern is, and I'm talking about this with our team, is the fact that we are so used to, at this point, to the company growing so rapidly, and there's so much demand for our services, and we're innovating and coming up with great ideas. I'm very concerned about complacency, about the team just thinking that this is for granted and this is how it's going to continue, because you and I know that good times do not last forever. And after great times, you're probably going to face some challenges at some point. So this is something that keeps me up at night. I think that the second thing is, there are so many opportunities in our space, and this is such a highly regulated industry. And if we're thinking about title and mortgage as well, those are super highly regulated industries as well. So I'm always trying to think about ideas. And I think that what's keeping me up is, how can we find ideas that will serve consumers and completely transform or improve their experience when they're buying or selling homes while remaining compliant? Because I think that all of those laws that were put in place in order to protect consumers were put in place, I don't know, 50 years ago, 70 years ago. They're just, in many cases, irrelevant for today, just because technology can do so many things. And with the current regulation, you're just prohibiting. And maybe you were trying to create a situation where the consumer is protected, but right now you're damaging the consumers because you're overprotecting them and you're preventing them from getting access to some things that could have been great for them. So all of those things are on my mind. I don't know if it makes sense.
No, absolutely. I mean, so what's the real focus when it comes to the growth of the business? Is it just bringing in more agents, as many as possible? I mean, that seems to be one of the main KPIs for Real.
Generally, as a company, we were never focused on agent count. Okay. We could have been at a much higher agent count at this point in time. I think that our focus was on transactions, because you can bring 10 right. agents that close one transaction a year, or agent that closes 10. So we rather focus on that, those higher performers. While you're bringing agents, you have to be mindful of culture, because you need to bring the right kind of people that have the same mindset, same kind of DNA, business DNA, because you don't want to jeopardize the great culture that we built here. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to growth, we're talking about transactions, and obviously agents drive transaction, but we're looking for the type of agents that are serious about practicing real estate. They want to grow, and they're willing to put in the work.
Very good. So how do you balance the focus on both profitability and growth as a business?
That's a really good question, because I think that from the very beginning, we were never one of those companies that raised hundreds of millions of dollars and just spend it on anything. And, you know, I'm not saying that we were smarter than everybody else. Maybe we just didn't have the opportunity. Maybe I wasn't doing a good job at raising money. Maybe that's the case. But I think that life taught us to be very careful with cash. So early on, in the early days, twice, once in 2017, second time in 2018, I had to lay off pretty much all of the staff and stay with just, you know, a handful of employees, just because we were not careful enough with the money that we had. So I think that when you're sitting with people who believed in you, that became part of a family, or became a family to you, and you have to tell them that, you know, you've made a mistake, there's not enough money, and they're fired, this is traumatic. And doing it for the second time, this is even more traumatic. So I think that those two things taught me to be very, very responsible with the way we manage budget, to account for every dollar, to make sure that there's an ROI at the end of every project, to model things in the right way, to take into account some worst case scenario. For example, when COVID hit, we were very frugal at that time, but immediately we did kind of an internal testing, a stress test, saying that what happens if we have zero revenue for 6 months? Do we have enough cash? And what do we need to do? So we did the stress test. The outcome was that we need to reduce 20% of everyone's salary. I went to everyone and said, okay, we have a pandemic. Nobody knows what's going to happen. People think that that the world is going to end in a couple of months. If all of you give up 20% of your salaries for the next 6 months, we will not have to lay off anyone. Are you willing to do it or not? Everybody was in favor of it. So I think that it's just trying to plan ahead, remembering the bad times, being very conservative, and you know, just understanding that at the end of the day, you need to build a profitable business. Like, investors are here because they want to see profit. And this is what we need to deliver. And, you know, there might be a few years in which you can sell a dream, and that dream is based on growth only. But at some point, that growth has to translate into profits.
Right.
And if you don't understand that, you have a problem.
Yeah, no, look, at some point, you know, the rubber's got to meet the road, you know, and especially in these, you know, not to go back to interest rates, but I mean, you've seen microcaps just gotten killed the last 3 years. Like, unless you're building a real business, like, no one even cares at this point, you know?
Yeah. And again, going back to 2023, one of the most challenging years for real estate in more than two decades, we actually turned profitable in that challenging year. So that's a testament of, I don't know, both the technology and the efficiency, the growth, and managing the budget correctly.
Absolutely. I mean, how also do you think about profitability also versus free cash, right? Because I think in, like, from what I saw, I think for Q3, it was EBITDA profitable, right? But not the net income, like, they were still operating at a loss and kind of in that growthy kind of stage there. So how do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, we are cash flow positive. We are adjusted EBITDA positive. Net profitability was negative just because of a lot of you know, stock-based compensation mainly. But in our business, EBITDA profitability translates into cash flow, free cash flow. So that's where we are right now. And we are generating cash.
All right. So another question that I have for you, and this is, this is my favorite, one of my favorite questions to ask everybody here. In your opinion, where do you want to see the company in 3 to 5 years? And what would you say are the inflection points that'll get you there?
That's an interesting question. My dream, so to speak, is for Real to be recognized again as the company that changed the way people buy and sell homes. So that if you as a consumer are thinking about buying a home, immediately Real comes into mind, because you would know that if you buy a home with Real and with a Real agent, the experience is going to be so far better than any other company, that this will be the go-to place when you're thinking about buying a home. Now, again, there's a lot of work to be done between now and then, but I believe that opportunity exists. I mean, think about the fact that this is the single largest asset class in the world. There's so little innovation in it. There's a true opportunity to become the most valuable real estate tech company in the world if we play our cards right. Now, in terms of inflection points, I think that we will have a few. One, the real wallet that we're launching. I think that this will add a lot to our profitability. And just this entire venture into fintech products, I think that opens up a lot of opportunities for the company to monetize transactions in a better way. Second is our consumer-facing app, which will take, I don't know, a few quarters to mature. But at the end of the day, it should take a person from thinking about buying a home, searching for homes, through taking a mortgage, through signing, searching for the homes, showings, signing the contract, and closing in one single place. And that experience should not take more than 14 days in my eyes, at least not the, you know, signing to close. It should deliver a lot of certainty, a lot of control. Right now, if you're buying a home, then you're waiting for your lender to tell you that they're clear to close. Sometimes they tell you, we're sorry, we made a mistake, we cannot close, and then you're back to square one. You should be controlling everything, you should be calling the shots, and you should have 100% certainty. So I think that the consumer-facing app will be an inflection point. And I can tell you that right now, we're also feeling a lot of momentum in terms of on the brokerage side with agents looking to join. So first week of January, we added 500 agents in a single week. The entire month of January, we added more than 1,000 agents. So we are feeling some sort of an inflection point. Even though we were growing very rapidly, it's intensifying, or at least has been intensifying. And I foresee that trend will continue.
Very good. All right. Tamir, you answered all my questions. I so appreciate you taking the time here. Where can our audience go and find more information about The Real Brokerage Inc. or Real? Excuse me.
I mean, there are a lot of YouTube videos. There are a lot of materials online. We're featured in a lot of publications. We're getting a lot of attention from media lately, just because, you know, we're now one of the largest brokerages in the country. So just type The Real Brokerage and you will get a lot of information. You can go to www.joinreal.com if you want to check us as an agent, or onereal.com as a consumer. All of the information is there.
Very cool. Well, Tamir, thank you so much for joining me today. Really do appreciate it. Good luck. Stay safe. And I look forward to our next update.
Thanks. Had fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not provided as financial, legal, or any other advice. The information is not investment advice or an offer to buy or sell any securities or make any investment. The views expressed by guest speakers are their own, and any reference to third-party products, services, or information does not constitute an endorsement thereof by SNN or its affiliates. SNN expressly disclaims all liability for any individual's use of the information presented in this podcast.